Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
We are well into the winter months now, and you can feel it, can't you? That urge to get away. Maybe some beach time to warm up those bones of yours. Maybe a hockey sports kind of road trip. Well, when you pack your bags, make sure you don't forget Alberta Blue Cross. There's only one thing better than sharing memories, and that's making new ones. Alberta Blue Cross travel insurance protects your memories and more wherever travel takes you. Visit ab.bluecross.ca/travel for more information. Alberta Blue Cross, celebrating life's memorable moments inspired by hockey.
Hey guys, it's Pinder chatting about Charm Diamond Centers. Did you know that Charm's been Canadian owned and operated since 1972? And there's over 85 locations coast to coast to coast with Charm and their sister brands. Get this now, you want to get something custom made? How about custom ring building delivered in less than 4 weeks? That's unreal. That is the Charm Masterpiece program, and they've got unbeatable pricing policies as well. Whether it's mine diamonds or Canadian lab-grown diamonds, check them out. For more information, go to charmdiamondcenters.com. That's charmdiamondcenters.com.
All right, gang, listen up. It's time to learn the pro pose. Coach?
Bend and snap.
Beautiful form. Nice arm extension. Facial expression, I could use some work. All right, let's see it. The pro pose. What's that guy doing?
I think that's the bend and snap.
That's a whole different deal.
Charm, home of the pro pose.
Oh! Every all-star needs a sidekick to support them. Just like every Wendy's meal needs a six-piece of nuggets. Right now, Wendy's is teaming up with Daily Faceoff Fantasy to bring you weekly prizes like free nuggets, burgers, and more. So if you think you're an expert in all things hockey, prove it. And if you aren't already, start adding a six-piece to your Wendy's order for just $3.49. It's the dynamic duo even you never saw coming. Sign up for Daily Faceoff today, sponsored by Wendy's and the Wendy's app. And now, more of Afterburner.
Well, it was a big night for Team Tank and for Joel Hanley Nation as the Calgary Flames fall by a 4-2 score against the Vancouver Canucks. My name is Mike Gould, and welcome to Afterburner for this Saturday, March 23rd. Excited to be here for my second time, first in the host chair, and I wouldn't have it any other way than to be joined by the guy whose real idea back 10, 15 years ago was to create Flames Nation in the first place. Our good buddy Kent Wilson is back with us today. Kent, how did you enjoy that game tonight?
Well, you know, they only scored a couple, the second one coming at the very end randomly, but, you know, I think the Flames played about as well as you can say they should, given the roster that they have. And there's a lot of talk about not accepting a losing culture for teams that are rebuilding. And I think there's more nuance to that. If you look at what you have to do during a rebuild, I think you should be judging your roster as, are they playing about as well as you could expect them to, given what they look like on paper? And I the Flames are doing that. Aside from that skid they had after the trade deadline, they're still playing respectful hockey. They were in this game through most of the evening.
Yeah, it's hard to really quarrel with too much of what we saw. I think the Flames were, of course, in this game for most of it until they gave up the empty net goal at the end. And even then, they scored a goal late, courtesy of Joel Hanley, who gets his first goal as a member of the Calgary Flames. AJ Greer has a two-point game. He picks up two assists. I mean, this is the sort of time of year. It's like it's reminiscent of when Steve Bajan scored a two-goal game at the end of the 2012-13 season. You kind of know what to expect to a certain extent. But yes, the Calgary Flames lose a second consecutive game and they fall to 33-31-5 on the season. Good for 71 points, which puts them way, way out of a playoff spot. I don't think we necessarily have to relitigate how far out they are. And with Minnesota and St. Louis going to a three-point game today, that just puts an exclamation point on it. They're not even close to those teams either. So it's really a matter at this point of the season, Kent, of looking at the standings and not necessarily being okay with a loss so much where you're actively cheering for them. I mean, different strokes for different folks, but also not going to bed feeling a little sick to your stomach after they do lose 4-2 to the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, at this point, I'm indifferent to how the games go at the end of the night. It doesn't really matter if they win or lose. I'm just looking for small victories, I suppose. Who's playing well, who isn't, you know, what experiments are working out. And yeah, I shared recently in the Discord server that we have the block of teams that are kind of fighting for 10th, getting into 10th overall, 10th pick at the draft. And I think it's the Flames and, you know, five other teams at this point.
We should say this is sort of a reunion of sorts for us. We've done stuff before. We'd like to give a shout out to the Big Body Presence community for all of you who are watching from there, because we know you all very well. You are probably wondering, if you're watching this show, where's Ryan Pinder? Where's Cammy Koepke? Where's Rhett Warner? Where's Boomer? Where's all those people? They're over at Greta Bar having fun on this Saturday night, as they very well should be. You know, on a 4-2 loss night, you might need to go to Greta Bar to get over it. Maybe not necessarily so much, you know, drinking your sorrows away at this point of the season, but they're there. Ryan Pike is there, managing editor of Flames Nation. He's got a book out. We'd love if you went and got it on the clock. It is part of a series that's going out for all the different Canadian teams, and he's there promoting his book. You can buy it online. You can buy it on the Amazon store. Anywhere you can buy books, you can get Ryan Pike's book. So they're there. You're here with me, Mike Gould, and Kent Wilson, as we break down this 4-2 loss to the Vancouver Canucks, which saw Nils Höglander really go off for the Canucks. He scored twice. The second one was a beauty. I mean, this is a guy who I remember when the Flames were looking at moving Elias Lindholm. There were pieces that were being bandied about, and we're going to talk more about this later, especially about Hunter Brustevich, who had two more assists today in the season finale for the Kitchener Rangers. Nils Höglander. I mean, there were times before that trade where I was saying, you know, I don't know if he necessarily is something that the Flames don't already have in their system relating to Jacob Pelche, Matt Coronato, but boy, oh boy, he looked like the real deal tonight.
Yeah, he fit really well in that line. And even that first goal, I mean, he was the recipient of that tic-tac-toe play, but that was outstanding, right? That's a highlight of the night on any sort of, sports show. So
it was shades of Radim Vrbata, the little kick backhand shot. Here's the look at that, at I believe the first goal that Nils Höglander scored. That's the tic-tac-toe of just Jacob Markstrom completely caught swimming. Nothing he could do. That kind of set the tone for the game. That goal came just 48 seconds in. The second goal, I'm not sure, Jack, if we have that one. I mean, that is just an all-world move coming in on Jacob Markstrom. I called it the Radim Vrbata. You can call it whatever you want. Jacob Markstrom had absolutely no chance on this one, as you know, you have Rasmus Anderson caught up the ice a little bit. Pettersson just gives Höglander the puck, and what are you going to do with that one?
Yeah, full credit to both of those goals. And, you know, after that first goal, you know, 50 seconds in, I was like, uh-oh, it's going to be one of those nights. And, you know, for the first 5 to 10 minutes, you could tell the Flames hadn't played for a while. Even when I was playing hockey way back in the day when I was a kid, if there was a long sort of break between action, I was always rusty for like that first period. And the Flames are bobbling stuff. But I thought they reeled it in, you know, after that.
I agree. I think they were, I thought they, generally speaking, were in striking distance. I mean, you look at the shots on goal in this game, and this was very much not a game that felt, at least to me, like it was a juggernaut Harlem Globetrotters team walking over the Washington Generals. The shots were 26-24. I mean, Jacob Markstrom had to make a couple nice saves. Thatcher Demko had a couple squeak by him where he had to reach back. But in the end, it was a game that was pretty close until the third period. I mean, I didn't think From an entertainment value perspective, I thought it was a pretty pretty sweaty, especially in the first period. I think you and I both were kind of sitting there thinking, "Ooh, this is we're settling in for a long night." I think in the second period, it picked itself up a little bit, and we saw that in what is going to go in as our highlight of the night, brought to you by Betway, when Rasmus Anderson got the Flames on the board with pretty nice shot. For Anderson, it's his eighth goal of the season. Obviously, he was drafted back in 2015 with a pick the Flames got from the Canucks, and he's a guy who they're going to have to make a decision on before long in terms of what he can do. But yeah, that's our Betway highlight of the night. There really wasn't a whole lot to choose from, as here it is.
Dishes, Greer takes it. Rasmus Anderson shoots and scores!
The Flames cut the... I mean, that's a howitzer of a shot. There's not a whole lot. Sorry, Casey DeSmith could have done with that one. But, you know, it was a night with pretty slim pickings. I mean, on a lot of nights, this is just sort of a cut and dry dime a dozen goal. But, hey, you got to give credit. It's a nice little drop pass by A.J. Greer, who I think you and I both sort of view as a nice value pickup for the Flames on waivers, which is something they haven't necessarily done enough of in the past. And, you know, two assist outing out of a guy like that, that's not nothing.
I thought he really struggled in the first, though. He had that one play where he passed it into the slot in the defensive zone directly to the Vancouver Canuck player. No Flame within 30 feet. But you're right, as a lot of the team, but him too, like as the game went along, he settled in. But whew, yeah, that first was a little rough.
Yeah, that is our Betway highlight of the night. You can get the Betway app on your phone. Bet the responsible way with Betway. With Betway, you can get a free bet up to $200 if your first bet loses. You can create a new account, scan the QR code on your screen and redeem your bonus. Place a bet, no minimum amount required. And if that bet loses, you will get a refund up to $200. You can then use that money to bet on your favorite sports. This offer is only available outside of Ontario. So you can go to Betway, place a $200 bet on the Flames winning the Stanley Cup, and in a couple months, you will get that $200 back because of that Betway promotion. And then you can bet anything you want to your heart's content. Once again, slim pickings for the Flames. It was a night where, you know, I didn't love Jonathan Huberto. Anderson was a bit of a goat on that second goal. It was tough to pick out any real standout performances. Connor Zeri, though, was a player who, in his first game back after an 8-game absence, I thought was really strong.
Yeah, he really stood out actually in the first period. I'm complaining about the rest of the team, but he was the one player that I noticed on a lot of shifts, you know, making plays. And the team has to be thrilled with his rookie season, given the way it's gone. You know, I really liked the pick when it happened, but he didn't have that sort of meteoric kind of development afterwards. But he's really come into his own the last couple of years, so it'll be interesting to see where he goes, you know, next year.
It was a really strong sequence of moves by the Flames that led to that pick too, because they traded down twice. For me, going into that draft, Zeri was the guy who I had kind of earmarked at 18 as the guy who was a guy who I thought was a really strong player. And they trade down, they get the third round pick that they used to select Jeremy Poirier. They trade down again, they used another third round pick on Jake Boltman, who probably won't sign with the Flames. But in any case, the guys who went immediately thereafter were guys who I wasn't looking at the Flames to pick at all. And then they get to 24 and Connor Zeri's still there. And you're like, this is fantastic. Now, I think for both of us, what we feel with this year is we'd like to maybe see the opposite happen with the Flames maybe looking to move up.
Ideally, yes. I don't know where they're going to land, obviously, because there's still some season left, but there's some really strong players in sort of the top 10, top 12 here. And if you can move up even more, that's great for the Flames, because they're at a point where they need to find as much elite talent as possible. I don't know if they have the assets to do it necessarily, but they do have that second first round pick. So we'll see. But yeah, well, you know, I think they can land in the top 12 potentially anyways, but if they can move up at all, they should do it.
They have a strong chance. And I think, you know, we can answer some more questions about this later. We encourage you to get your questions in on our YouTube chat for us to answer in the second portion of the show. But you look, I think most analysts I've talked to have talked about a top 10, top 12 area. And for the Flames after tonight, I mean, you look at where they stand in the league-wide standings. They're near the bottom of that Western Conference. They're now in 22nd in the NHL. They're 1 point behind the New Jersey Devils, who have two extra games played. Yes. So the Flames have some opportunities to catch up there, but you got Buffalo, Pittsburgh, and Seattle all nipping on their heels. There's a very good chance that the Flames could end up finishing behind all three of those teams. And if they do, that would leave just San Jose, Chicago, Anaheim, Columbus, Montreal, Ottawa, and Arizona ahead of them. So if you're looking for a guy like Zane Parekh or Konsta Hellenius or Carter Yakimchuk or even Tiija Ginla, you know, they're on the right track, so to speak. And I mean, they have one of those teams coming up tomorrow. We'll get to that in the second half of the show too. Second half of a back-to-back against a Buffalo team with a lot to play for. You know, again, you don't want to necessarily watch a team completely implode and crash and burn, but you're at the part of the season where they're very much out of the race.
Yeah, they're not playing for playoffs or anything like that. It's pride at this point. And when it comes to the future of the organization, you know, picking the top 10 is more important than winning every game for sure.
100%. So let's dig into a little bit. We talked a little bit earlier about the trade, the big trade that these two teams made earlier this season, not the Nikita Zadorov trade, but the Elias Lindholm trade that sent him to the Vancouver Canucks in exchange for a package of 5 assets, a first round pick of the Vancouver Canucks this year, another conditional pick from the Vancouver Canucks, 2 defense prospects, Hunter Brustevich and Yoni Yermo, and Andrei Kuzmenko. We're going to single out 3 of these pieces. We're going to talk about Lindholm, Kuzmenko, and Brustevich. And let's start with Lindholm, because you and I have both talked in recent weeks about how Lindholm has struggled since he's joined the Canucks. And he scored tonight. He got the empty net goal to make it a 4-2 game. It was unassisted. It was his first goal in over a month. I believe his last goals were on February 15th when he scored twice against the Detroit Red Wings. It's been a real, real rough ride for Elias, but he was good in the faceoff dot tonight, if you can take any silver lining away, and he ends up getting that last goal.
Yeah, I actually didn't notice him at all until that goal happened. It didn't occur to me he was playing, to tell you the truth. And there were some of those games, obviously, this year with the Flames, but I always thought it was because it was a player kind of playing out the string. He knew his time here was coming to an end, and he didn't really have chemistry with some of the players in he was playing with. But yeah, it hasn't gone much better for him in Vancouver. And it looks like he's playing down the rotation there now, which is not the reason I'm sure they picked him up for such a steep price when they did. So I'm sure there's probably some frustration on both ends, and we'll see if he can figure it out. But yeah, so far, not great for them.
Now, I wasn't watching when Elliot said this, but I think Friedman said during the Hockey Night in Canada broadcast tonight, I think during the broadcast of the Toronto-Edmonton game, that Lindholm is actually expected to see a specialist next week about some sort of nagging issue that he is facing. Now, it would make sense because, you know, I think you and I have discussed in the past about, you know, Lindholm not necessarily being the driver on the line with Elias Lindholm, with Johnny Gaudreau, Matthew Tkachuk, couple of years ago, and how he struggled to find a fit with Jonathan Huberdeau. But he's never, to me at least, looked quite this ineffectual. And it's been something that has really dogged him, especially since getting to Vancouver, where you figured, you know, you look at every metric that we have access to with Elias Lindholm, he is near the bottom of the list for Vancouver in pretty much every single one of them. They're a strong team at 5-on-5. They're not near the top of the standings for an accident. But when he's on the ice, they're getting torpedoed.
Well, that was true in Calgary too. I mean, I looked at his relative stats before he left, and I think I put something on Twitter at one point. And, you know, people were talking about Huberdeau at the time, and I said, you know, Lindholm's having a terrible season too, and it never got much better. And as I said, I thought it was just something about his circumstances. But yeah, it's the same in Vancouver, and he should be playing a lot better there. So yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if there's something else behind that poor play, because it should be better than this. Because he's not, you know, as you say, he wasn't a mere passenger with Gaudreau over the years. He was contributing. So yeah, this level of play is surprising.
Well, the biggest thing to me is, like, for years, Lindholm has had this reputation as being a very strong two-way player, and I think to an extent it is deserved, but when you looked at the underlings, especially during his top season in Calgary, he was always a way stronger offensive player than he was a defensive player. He had very good offensive impacts, And you could see why. He had an excellent shot. Like, I thought that was his big calling card when he was in Calgary. I remember him being on the right side of that line in his first year with Gaudreau and Monahan. And his shot was lethal. He had such a slick release. And that was something we didn't see at all in the last season, two seasons. It has been such a precipitous decline. It reminds me of Monahan, quite frankly, when he was in his last season or two with the Flames. So I wonder if this has been something that's been nagging him for a while. But in any case, I hope, you know, I don't want to see a player do poorly. Like, I want to see Elias get better and have, you know, I've been so happy to see Sean Monahan have this bounce back of sorts. Even if his underlings haven't been the best with Montreal and Winnipeg, he's still producing. He's going to score 50 points this year. That's something that I want to see with Elias. So it's something where you're not necessarily happy seeing him do poorly, but you are excited about the return that the Flames got trading for him. It's crazy when you consider they sold off five UFAs. And the return that they got for Lindholm, who has arguably performed the worst out of the five, was the best. And that was headlined, sort of, by Andrei Kuzmenko, who is both seen, obviously, as a reigning 39-goal scorer, but also as a cap dump in this trade, who has, I think, the same number of goals as Elias Lindholm in the month and a half since that deal. Now, you and I have both seen people saying, Kuzmenko, is this a guy who you keep around? Is this a guy who is maybe a centerpiece of this Flames team for years and years to come? Now, I don't dislike the player, but I would maybe you exercise some caution. What would you say?
Yeah, I would say ideally this is a flip opportunity where you take the cap dump as part of the trade. You try to rehabilitate the player and the asset over the next year or so, and then you move him at the deadline. Now, anything's possible, of course. Maybe he becomes a huge leader and you don't want to lose that personality. That seemed unlikely. But where we're standing now, I would say you hope you can move him for a pick or a prospect next year.
Yeah, and you don't want to get roped into a situation where you sign a guy. I mean, kind of like the Jonathan Huberto situation where you sign a guy and the extension looks bad before it's even started. And, you know, if you get to the end of this season and you say, well, we want to commit to this guy, and then all of a sudden he starts playing like he did in Vancouver, which honestly, I would say his Flames tenure so far hasn't really been that different from what he was this season in Vancouver. He's maybe just playing a little bit more and his shooting percentage is up a little bit. But to me, this is a guy who's not all that dissimilar to Andrew Mangiapane, who I think has better underlying numbers, but maybe worse finishing. And, you know, 95% of online Flames community wants to run him out of town. And, you know, they're both UFAs after next season. You kind of wonder where these two guys slot in long term.
Yeah, I don't think there's any chance that Mangiapane stays. I think he'll be looking for a way out anyways. But Kuzmenko, I don't know. The Flames are at the point in their transitional period where the only people they should be signing like that in that sort of cohort is guaranteed leaders who are going to help this transitional period in the locker room and as an organization, or guys who turn out to be just cornerstone players. And I don't think it's unlikely that Kuzmenko's either of those things.
You know, this kind of parlays into a discussion that I want to eventually have about Yegor Sharangovich, who is a guy who I've always really liked. And he's only a couple years younger than Andre Kuzmenko, but he's also a UFA after next season. And I would say that almost everybody in Calgary wants them to re-sign him, but it's kind of an interesting question. We'll get to that in a little bit, because I think that's maybe something somebody will ask about what Sharangovich is going to be. Because, you know, you see it on the surface. He's a brand new player for the Flames. He's had an amazing season. But at the same time, you're looking at a guy who's a UFA after next year. And do you want to give this guy 6 or 7 years? We'll table that for later. For now, I want to talk about Hunter Brustevich, because this guy just racked up 92 points in a season in his draft plus one year, which has not happened for a Flames defense prospect in, I think, 38 years. Now, the last guy who did it didn't turn into anything. He never played in the NHL. He was an eighth round pick way back when. But that was a time when the OHL and the WHL were a bit more of a jungle. These days, you know, these players are rigorously developing. They are under the watchful eye of development staffs. They aren't just sort of let loose to run free, regardless of what a team's defensive system is. And Brustevich being a 92-point scorer as a defenseman, why did Vancouver trade this guy?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it does remind me of Adam Fox. when they picked him in the third round, and he started just putting up big points. But even when he was doing that in the D plus, in his D plus one season, people were still pretty skeptical of him. I wrote some stuff about him. Actually, I worked with Byron Bader on a piece for The Athletic on Adam Fox because his results were so outstanding. And Byron was building his model at the time that you can find at hockeyprospecting.com right now. And he said, this is like Brian Leetch stuff. And it turned out that, you know, Adam Fox wasn't big. He wasn't a great skater. So people were like, yeah, it's probably not going to translate to the NHL, and he's a superstar. So I'm not saying that's going to happen again, but when you see outstanding results like this, it's noteworthy.
Yeah, I think what the Flames deserve a lot of credit for, and I'm very hesitant to give credit when it's not due, but I think it is due in this respect for assembling a diverse defensive pool of guys where you have the Bruce Deviches, you have the ATM Morans, you have the Jeremy Poiriers. They're not discounting the high upside bets. They have some lower upside bets who are toolsy, who you can look at from a pro scouting side and say, this guy is really good at moving the puck up the ice. He doesn't necessarily get the points. And in a Byron Bader model, which you and I both like, they don't necessarily grade out the best, but you can watch a guy like Artem Grushnikov and see why they like him, even if it's not necessarily the guy who always shows up on the stat sheet. So you have these guys, you have bets like Daniil Miramanov, who I know I'm personally very intrigued by, even though he's a little bit older, but and so I think when you look at what they've done, adding at least one intriguing defenseman in pretty much all of their big sale trades, I mean, you maybe look at this year's draft and say maybe they can get a number one to add on top of this pile, but the early returns, especially with Brustevich and Jeremy Poirier, who is looking pretty good in his return after coming back from missing 4 or 5 months with a laceration, it's pretty promising, even if the forwards are still a work in progress.
Yeah, they have a lot of defensemen. They keep having them in their trades. And you're right, they have a mix of them. You have like the Tanev side of things, but you also have the Rasmus Anderson side of things. And you can see that they're looking for that balance in their prospect pool. So it will be interesting to see what they do at the draft, because you're right, there is a lot of high-end defensemen that should be within their range.
Well, we'll take an opportunity here to take a step back one more time. The final score for today's game, the Canucks 4, the Flames 2, Rasmus Anderson and Joel Hanley getting the goals for the Flames, who have lost back-to-back. We'll be back with you right after this on Afterburner.
Greta, it's our home away from home for Afterburner. We'll be there for live watch parties throughout the season. Should be your spot regardless, before, during, and after the game. Grab a cocktail, something from the menu, let the games begin, or maybe you get into the game yourself. Over 50 arcade games from vintage to state-of-the-art. Load up some credits on that Greta game card of yours and get at it. Greta Calgary, located at 213 10th Avenue Southwest. Check them out online, gretabar.com.
It's nearly the best time of the year. Playoff hockey is around the corner, and I'll tell you what, the Grey Eagle Resort and Casino is the place to be. Cheer on your favorite teams with us at the Stage Bar. Enjoy the big game, one of those huge screens over the bar with friends, drinks, and delicious food. Let's go. Visit greyeagleresortandcasino.ca for more information. Now, while I've got your attention, let me tell you about the happy hour at the Grey Eagle Resort and Casino. Let's make the most of the day and spend your afternoons with great drinks and food. Join us at the Stage Bar and Blaze Bar and Grill for our new happy hour every day, 2 till 5. Enjoy food, drinks, all starting at $5. Make the most of your days. Visit greyeagleresortandcasino.ca for more information. If you're thinking of buying or selling your home in the Calgary area, there's one guy you've got to talk to. That's Derek Newman of the Derek Newman Real Estate Group with CIR Realty. Buying or selling doesn't really matter. Derek does it all. He's a volunteer in the community, active in sports around the city, whether it's golf, curling, huge Flames fan. So talking sports or talking about the real estate market, definitely give him a shout. He's approachable, trustworthy, and hardworking. Also, Derek's got a pretty vast network. He's even got access to some homes often that aren't even on the market yet. And you can ask him about his complimentary home staging consultation as well. Buying or selling, call him or text him right now at 403-619-6661. Derek will make it easy for you. Get Derek and his network to work for you. That's Derek Newman. Email him at dnewman@cirrealty.ca. More post-game reaction right here. We're back on Afterburner.
Yes, indeed, we are back on Afterburner. Thanks, Pinder. And I'm looking at the chat here, seeing some people talking about Elias Lindholm. They're not very impressed with what they saw tonight. Also seeing some people shouting out Sam Morton, who's a guy we haven't talked about yet. New Flames right. prospect. Flames prospect, who's already 24, will be 25 in July, but got a shout out to BCHL alum, got some BCHL Okotoks Oilers stuff back here. He played for the Wenatchee Wild, who are no longer in the BCHL. I love it when a franchise changes leagues. They went up into the WHL, and now they're one of the American teams, the Dub. But he played for Mankato. I think he might have played at Mankato alongside Connor Mackey, who very similar Flames prospect in terms of being an older guy coming in late in the season, you know. But Morton, goal and assist in his first three AHL games. So never know. I mean, that's the sort of signing I don't mind the Flames making. The other guy who I'd love to see them make is Colin Graf from Quinnipiac. That guy is a monster on the reigning national champions. But, I mean, these signings can work. They can't, but no downside.
Yeah, those are the type of bets that the Flames should be taking right now. I mean, get every player like that you can into the organization, because you're trying to put your thumb on the scales of probability, right? And it helps to have as many top 10 picks as possible, but it's also about volume. So get as many quality kids into the organization as you can.
It's a boon for the Calgary Wranglers too, because they've been going through a rough stretch with Matt Coronato up. They just got Pelche back. Now they have Morton. But that's a team that has lost its entire top line and then some from last year. They had Matthew Phillips, Connor Zary, and Jacob Pelche, which was the best line in the AHL by my estimation. Watching Wranglers games these days is a bit tougher, even now they have Jeremy Poirier back. But they get a big boost with Sam Morton. Hopefully they can make a run up the AHL standings. And now, speaking of being hungry for some more wins, we're going to go into our DoorDash Hungry for More segment. And Kent, we'll start off with you with the Flames right now with, I don't even know how many games left in the season, 13 games remaining in the 23-24 season. What are you hungry for more of from this club?
I think I'm hungry for more experimentation at this point, because last 13 games, you know, we know that the backline line works. That's a very solid trio. We don't need to see more of it, honestly. They help the team be competitive every night, but let's mix it up. Let's get Dustin Wolf into more starts. Let's get, you know, if Coronado is going to be on the parent roster, then let's skate him. Like, we don't need the fourth line that we saw tonight. You know, all credit to all those guys. They're playing fine, but, you know, let's get the kids in. Let's play around with the chemistry. You know, see if something sticks. We don't need to be dressing the right depth chart every night according to, you know, this is what's going to make us most competitive. That doesn't really matter at this point.
The funny thing to me is, like, we've been talking for years and years and years about the Flames don't give shots to their prospects, and now they have, and we've seen guys like Marty Pospisil and Connor Zary come up and have extended sequences. Even Jacob Pelche, even though Ryan Huska hasn't given him very much ice time, Matt Coronado has been in and out, he's had some looks, and they've given looks to guys like Cole Schwintz and Adam Klapka. Pretty much everybody on the farm who is deserving, especially up front. I mean, the only guys who I would say at this point, Ben Jones, I mean, really, and you're getting down into the guys who are sort of on the border of even still being prospects at that point. But and hopefully you look at guys like Sam Honzik in the next year or two. We haven't really gotten into him and his sort of disappointing D+1 season, even though he's been injured. But for me, yeah, I think I'm going to go with, I think we should talk a little bit about Sam Honzik. I'm hungry for more from him because it's been a tough D+1 season. And it's not really anything that you can control when you have these injuries. And for me, it's something that can be, you know, bounced back from. The good thing that I like with Sam Honzik, and it's sort of a blessing and a curse because he's an early birthday. He's an 04, which means that he has theoretically less developmental runway. He's older. He just doesn't have the extra 4, 5, 6 months to develop where some of these other guys who were drafted later do. And obviously the production hasn't really been there, but you can get him into the AHL next season. And I'm almost wondering if that's the right play for this Flames team. When you're looking at a guy like Honzik, who I think based on pretty much every account, plays a very pro style and refined game. He has not even been the focal point at times on a Vancouver Giants team that has, you know, very conflicting goals. They have guys like Connor Levis and Jaden Lipinski and, you know, another Flames prospect who they are trying to win with. And Honzik is a younger guy relative to some of them. But with what you're looking at with Honzik being eligible for the AHL next year and with the Wranglers having all sorts of opportunity, I think it's a huge chance for them to get more of a look on him, more of a book on him. Because as of right now, where he's at, I don't know if I want the status quo with him. I want to see something different. I'm hungry for him to have that change. Because when you look at the guys who were picked after him, like Axel Sandin Pelikka, Quentin Musty, there's a number of guys who have really progressed in their D plus ones. It just hasn't quite happened yet for him.
Yeah, I guess it depends on, so you don't want to rush a prospect like this if you think he's going to struggle in the AHL. So it's, is it going to be a better developmental environment for him is the big question. Because you're right. Is something not working in Vancouver for him and that's why there was a step back? Or was it sort of an injury-plagued draft season, or draftless one season? And he just needs another year in the WHL to take that next step because it didn't happen this year. And that's what you're really looking for, especially from your what you would consider your top-end prospect, right? You need that big step forward to be happy with it, right? So you're right. They're going to have to make that decision. It's good to have that option.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
But you really don't want to push him into the AHL and see him be on a fourth line or a scratch.
No, absolutely not. And I think that's something where with Trent Call down there, he has his guys and he does promote prospects, and that's the name of the game. Every coach in the AHL plays the prospects who think will help them win. It is going to be an interesting balancing act because the Wranglers this year are a very different team than they have been. They just traded Emilio Pettersson for Riley Damiani, who's typically a center. They have holes on the wings, especially if Pelletier and Coronado come up. So I'm very intrigued because for me, I would love to see Sam Honzik just given a trial by fire. I would love to see him paired up with a guy like Ben Jones, just teach him sort of the traits and see if he can use his big frame and make it work down there. Because, I mean, they're going to have a conversation with Vancouver. They're going to have a conversation with the player. I think we know that Hunter Brustevitz is going to be in the American Hockey League next season. But yeah. Honzik is, I think, to me, it's 60-40. And so I'm hungry to see what they do. It's sort of a reach, hungry for more. I mean, I'm hungry for him to do more this season. It's been really tough. And we've talked about Connor Zary. I talked about him with Cammy Koepke when I was on the show last time, how he had a really tough, I think, D+2 season where he was first coming into the American League. And he scored like 20 points. And he broke his foot in training camp. And he never looked the same after that. And, you know, you're hoping that this guy can turn into something for your team. But I think, and it's too early to be writing him off, but it's just, it's concerning. And you just want to know what the status quo is. But anyway, That is your DoorDash hungry for more with restaurants, grocery, pharmacies, bakeries, flower shops, and more. DoorDash really has everything you need. Ordering is easy. Just order, open the DoorDash app, choose what you want from where you want, and your items will be left safely outside your door with our default contactless delivery setting. And for a limited time, our listeners can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code NATION25. Once again, that is code NATION25 for 25% off your first order with DoorDash. Offer valid in Canada, subject to change. Terms apply. That is our DoorDash Hungry for More segment. Sam Honzik. I mean, that's just a pick that I know you particularly were a little bit skeptical of at the time. I was sort of ambivalent. I mean, there was one guy who I really didn't want them to pick, who was Charlie Strammel. No disrespect to him. Aside from that, I was kind of ambivalent. There was Axel Sandy, Pelikas, Honzik. But, you know, for the Flames, I think what we're looking at is this year is the opportunity for them to maybe get their first foundational piece. Who are some guys in this year's draft who you have sort of identified as players who, if the Flames end up with them, you'll be like, oh, this is really exciting?
I guess it depends on how the draft goes, right? Because you have Celebrini at the top. He's going number one. And then there's a lot of question marks after that, because there is that sort of second tier of like the next, I don't know, 9 to 10 players, where it could really go in a lot of different directions. There's a lot of defensemen. There's a lot of high-end offensive defensemen. There's the giant Russian defenseman, Siliev, out there, who could go anywhere in that top 15. I think someone could fall in love with him, or he could drop because he doesn't have that offensive flair to him. You got TJ Ginla, as you said. So does he end up a top 10 player at the end? So there's a lot of guys I would be pretty happy with, as long as you see that sort of elite top end talent, or that big, you know, high ceiling. I don't like low floor players in the top 10. You should be picking for who's going to be, you know, the best possible ceiling with those guys. How about you?
I'll tell you what, I watched Carter Yakimchuk against, who were they playing? It was a couple games ago for the Hitmen. It was over the weekend. And he was really fun. Like, I was watching this guy, and I wasn't sure what to expect. I knew sort of the scouting report on him was he's this big, rugged, right-handed defenseman with a big shot who can be really aggressive in a lot of ways. And boy, did I ever see that. He is the embodiment of a rover. He plays for the Hitmen. He is a big right-handed defenseman. Their season's over, but he scored his 30th goal of the season tonight. They're not going to make the playoffs. 30 goals for a defenseman in his draft year is something special. He's a bit older.
Oh,
I think he's
Eddie Hamilton, maybe, then, would you say?
Yeah, like that's – so when I was watching, I was really interested in seeing what the comparables were. And for Yakimchuk, what I came away with was, if everything goes right for this guy, he could be Dougie Hamilton. Like, there's right. Nothing preventing that from happening. And I know for some Flames fans, Dougie Hamilton is sort of regarded derisively. He's not a player who fans right. ended up liking all that much in Calgary. But I think if you can get a guy like that at pick 11, 12, you are running to the bank, cashing that check and screaming Absolutely. Excitedly, because when Dougie's on, he's a top five defenseman in the league. That's just me being frank. And, you know, I think the floor, though, and this was funny to me, because this is a guy who Yakimchuk loves going on these rushes up the ice. He is a complete rover. He has just this confidence that is sometimes, I would say, a little bit misplaced. And he reminded me a lot of Nikita Zadorov in that respect as well, who was also a first round pick of the Buffalo Sabres back in the day. But boy, oh boy, I was just reminded so much of Zadorov as well. So, I mean, you talk about a range of outcomes, right? You look at certain players who were drafted in the first round, and the range of outcomes is about this big. With Yakimchuk, it's about this big. And yeah, I mean, you can't even see my hands. I think the same goes for a guy like Zane Parekh. But that's kind of what you want, isn't it? Because when you have that high range of outcomes, theoretically, at one end, you got a real good player who can be a cornerstone player. You look at guys like Quinn Hughes, and then you look at guys like Cam Barker. That's one range to the other side. Yeah. And, you know, but that's a gamble worth taking, right?
I think so. 30 goals for a defenseman in his draft year is extremely rare in junior. So you never know in the draft unless you're picking, you know, a Celebrini, but they're not going to be doing that. But Probably there's, not. You know, there's some forwards they could look at too, depending on how things a shakeout here. So I'm really intrigued to see who they pick with their first rounder for sure.
It is reminding me a lot of the 2021 draft when you had the consensus top nine. And after that, it was a complete crapshoot. Tyler Boucher went at number 10. But from 1 to 9, it was Owen Power, Dylan Gunther, Simon Edvinson, Matty Beniers, that sort of tier. And once you got out of that, it was who knows. Calgary ended up getting Matt Coronato out of that, who I thought was sort of at the top of that next tier. But this year, to me, it's a group of 12. And if you're looking at forwards, that you got the Consta Heleniuses, you've got the Tiija Ginless. I think he's right at the very tail end of that top 12 with the year that he's been having. You got the Berkeley Cattons, you've got the Caden Lindstroms. It is such an interesting year. And the good thing for the Flames, at least, for me at least, is that the majority of the guys in that top tier are either centers or defensemen. That's the nice thing. And for a team like the Flames, that especially at center has struggled to draft them at the top end, this is a year where a lot of that could change.
Yeah, we'll see if any of those guys. You got Cole Yzerman, too, who might be the best.
He's a winger, but yes. Yeah.
Right, but he might be the best scorer in the league.
Exactly.
in the draft, so pure scorer at least. So there's a lot of intriguing players. And we've discussed sequencing when it comes to rebuilding in the community so often. And I think you sometimes want to get those defenders earlier so they can mature and be in the 23 to 26 range by the time you get that cornerstone forward, if possible. Like, that's how the Chicago Blackhawks kind of built that pseudo dynasty, you know, back in the Kane and Taves day. You know, I think Seabrook and Keith were already 25, 26 years old by the time those other guys came up, and then they're all ready to rock and roll by that point.
They'd also drafted Cam Barker before those guys came in.
Yeah, that didn't go well, but
they ended up trading him for Nick. They ended up trading him for Nick Leddy, so kind of worked out.
That's right.
Yeah, it kind of goes back to that whole cohort philosophy that my friend, the Rebuilding Blog at Rebuilding Blog on Twitter, is all about. You should go follow him because he's got really good analysis on this. You want to look at drafting these guys earlier in your build and having them sort of follow this wave, where you have them cresting at the same time, they're coming off their entry-level contracts, and you can fit guys underneath the cap with your best players costing the least. At Rebuilding Blog on Twitter, because he's got some really good ideas on that. And it is something that I think the Flames are in prime position to do, because you look at how many defensemen they have already sort of amassed. They've got all sorts of different kinds of guys, and we've talked about that. So it's really interesting. Of course, they've still got 13 games left to play, and that takes us into our road ahead, coming from Village Honda. And, you know, coming up, of course, they got a really quick turnaround going in tomorrow against the Buffalo Sabres. Talked a little bit about that, a team with a lot to play for. I mean, late in this season, it's sort of reminiscent of last year when they went on a similar late season tear, going up and up in the standings and tanking their draft positioning a little bit, although they ended up getting Zach Benson at 13, which was a really nice pick for them. Something that maybe they could replicate this year. But in the interim, they are right in the thick of what I've described as an unserious Eastern Conference playoff race, featuring some of the worst potential playoff teams I've ever seen, with the Detroit Red Wings and the Washington Capitals. I cannot believe those two teams are battling out for one playoff spot. The Buffalo Sabres are also in there. They're not that much better than Detroit or Washington, even though I would say they're probably both better than, or they're probably better than both those teams, just going by some of the underlyings. You guys, I don't know if you know this, Detroit's underlyings, if you go by expected goals, chance differential, they're worse than Montreal. They're worse than Anaheim. They're worse than Columbus. It is beyond crazy that they're in the playoff race at this point of the year. But with Buffalo, you got a team tomorrow that is coming together at a good time. They got Bowen Byram in that trade with Colorado for Casey Middlestad, he is playing quite well, although his defensive results have been a little bit iffy in recent games. But it's a team that is coalescing interestingly, and I think the Flames will have a tough test on their hands tomorrow.
Well, if there's an organization that's hungry for any sort of success after a very long, unsuccessful rebuild so far, it's definitely going to be them. So, yeah, I really expect they're going to charge hard for that last playoff spot. And you're right, like, they have a chance at it, because it is kind of a clown show over in the East when it comes to the last playoff spot. So they definitely have a chance at it.
Yeah, and then after that game against the Sabres, the Flames have dates against two of the very worst teams in hockey, in the Chicago Blackhawks and the St. Louis Blues. You might be surprised to hear me have St. Louis in there. but a lot of their underlings are worse than Detroit's this season somehow, and yet they are ahead of the Flames in the standings. They're sort of mounting a late season run for maybe a playoff spot. I think Jordan Kyrou had a hat trick tonight against the Minnesota Wild in a overtime thriller that really pushed the Flames back, because that was a 3-point game with two teams that they're chasing in the standings. But in any case, their next three games are against teams very much out of the playoff picture, and against Chicago and St. Louis, there's a pretty good chance that they're going to get at least a couple points.
I don't know if I'd say that, because the Flames have been terrible against bad teams this year, especially
that is
Chicago.
True. That is true.
I would not put money on that if you're betting. So, yeah, none of those teams have anything to play for. Well, St. Louis does, so I would expect they at least come out and play their best game possible. Chicago obviously is trying to tank pretty hard, even though they have Bedard already. But, the Flames... there's something about Blackhawks especially that is some kryptonite for Calgary the last couple of seasons. So, yeah, I don't know if the Flames will win that one or not.
It was funny because I go back to the 2014-15 season when the Flames sort of came out of nowhere, and that their first real big statement win of that season that proved or at least showed that, hey, we mean something this year, we might actually do something, was against Chicago. It was an overtime win where I think they got outshot like 45-18. They won. I think it was Chris Russell who scored in overtime. I think it was like a 2-1 game or something. And the Flames seemed to have Chicago's number for a little bit after that. And now we're getting to a point where the Flames are not good against lottery teams, which, I mean, bodes well for their own chances. I mean, you're talking about the Village Honda Road ahead, 13 games, and then we're getting into draft lottery territory. And the Flames are the lottery. They're in the lottery despite, you know, even if they don't finish in the bottom 10 or 11, they still have a chance to move up. It's going to be a very small chance, but it is there. And, you know, until then, 13 games to sort of slog through. It's going to be fun. It'll be, you know, it'll be educational. I think that's the best word to describe the final 13 games of this season for the Flames. It goes back to what you were saying about wanting to experiment.
Yeah, absolutely. And if anyone wants to experiment with the draft lottery odds, just go to tankathon.com.
Absolutely.
And you can play, press it until you get the first overall for the Flames. It might take a few spins, but then they do a mock draft based on wherever you land too. So it's pretty handy.
Well, you know, I was going back today, looking at every draft class the Flames have had to determine the last time that one of their prospects on defense scored 100 points on the season. I finally figured it out. But I was looking back in the 80s, and you know, where they are right now, they have had a lot of success sort of in this area of the draft, at least back then they did, because one of their big guys who ended up winning them that Stanley Cup in 1989 was none other than Gary Roberts, who they picked at number 12 overall. So wouldn't that be nice if the Flames could get a guy like that this year? This has been the Village Honda Road Ahead. New in-stock inventory on the ground at Village Honda. Start your automotive adventures at Village Honda, where new vehicle pricing is MSRP. We'll talk about the Honda Accord. My dad used to have a black Honda Accord. It was a wonderful car, but it was about a 2002. Well, the 2024 Honda Accord was newly redesigned just last year, and it was chosen by Car and Driver magazine as the number one midsize sedan, one of the most reliable vehicles on the road, and it is better than ever. Superior ride quality, reliability, and impressive fuel economy thanks to the EXL hybrid. And they got a huge selection of used vehicles as well over at Village Honda. And of course, you know, all those cars are going to run until they're like 400,000 kilometers because they're Hondas. They're the best cars ever. Thank you, Village Honda. That is the road ahead. Well, Jack, maybe we can get into some viewer questions here because we're getting sort of the home stretch of the show, just like it's the home stretch of the season here on Afterburner. And see if we got anything cooked up in our comments section. Here we go from Colton. Despite how good the fourth line was tonight, and I agree, I thought it was okay, why are Coronado and Pelche not in the lineup? Kent, why do you think that is?
I think as far as it goes with Pelche is they're probably not convinced he's ready for the NHL after very long, you know, most of the season out. I'm sure they saw him mostly struggle while I was here. He seems relatively pensive compared to when he broke into the league. You noticed him a lot of the time. He didn't really this time. So I think they just want him to get his legs back underneath him in the AHL, get more confidence. Coronado, I agree. It's, you know, if he's going to be up with the team, let's play him if we can. It might be kind of tough because it's hard to place him in a right wing spot in the top nine, but you know, let's get him in the lineup.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I personally would approach it, because I love Marty Pospisil. I've been a huge proponent of his for years. I will say this. I didn't like the pick when they first made it, but then I saw him play and I was sold. This guy, you know, he's fearless and he's been so good this year. But I think going forward, he settles in as a bottom six guy, third, fourth line. And that doesn't mean that he's not an effective player. I mean, you know, and that doesn't mean that he can't necessarily go back up in the right scenario if the right players come along. I mean, we saw Michael Ferland sort of go up and down, and then eventually he settled in on Gaudreau and Monahan's wing. And maybe Pospisil, when the Flames draft the number one center, if they ever do, will get that plum treatment eventually. But for now, I'm almost wondering if you maybe reshuffle things around where you put Pospisil, maybe, I don't even know what line you'd put him on. That's what I was going to say, is maybe you put him with Coleman and Backlund, because I think in terms of his possession, he's really strong. And you maybe give Mangiapane a new look. I mean, there's a guy who I know a lot of the chat has soured on, and he just doesn't look. I know you loved Andrew Mangiapane for when he first came in. I did too. He was awesome.
He can't finish all of a sudden.
No, something's just gone awry with Andrew Mangiapane. And it's almost at the time where I think he needs just a new fresh start. And I would wish him well when that happens. And I think they could maybe even do it this summer. But you look at their situation on the wings and they are just so jammed up. They're gummed up. They got all these guys. Adding Kuzmenko doesn't help. Bringing Coronado in on a full-time basis makes it even harder. So you just wonder what they're going to do. And with Coronado, I mean, the upside is there. I have not been the hugest fan of his game this season, but I mean, he has the attributes.
He's still very raw.
Very raw, but he has the attributes that you look at and you say, wow, this guy can really shoot the puck. He's not a terrible skater, even though I have issues with his mechanics. And he's smart. He's a good player. I think there is an NHL player in there who will be a guy in the NHL for a long time. It's just a matter of what that fit is. So I wonder about maybe shifting Pospisil around and putting Coronado in that plum spot. It's just a Agreed. Little thought experiment. Now let's got anything else down there, Jack? See, here we go. Curious who gets traded in the offseason. Oh boy, this is kind of a segue for Conroy to pick up players in the summer, since the majority of the players have at least one more year left. So if you go to Cap Friendly, I mean, the big guys for the Flames who have one more year left, you're talking about the Mangiapanes. You're talking about Andre Kuzmenko. I think Rasmus has 2 years left after this one. Yes, he does. Markstrom has 2 years left as well after this one.
I know, but
yes, that is right. Yes, of course. And I think that's obviously the big fish who they almost traded the trade deadline, a guy who they very much probably could trade to get different kinds of assets from other teams. Yeah, Kent, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know how much, aside from Markstrom, how aggressive they're going to be in the summer in terms of the guys with another year left. Just because unless someone comes around and says, I want this guy, like maybe Carolina calls and says, I need Mangiapane this summer. Okay. But the team, like the Flames still have to ice a team next year, right?
It's true.
And you can always trade those guys at the trade deadline. So especially with Mangiapane, who's coming off of what people would consider a down year. So you're probably not going to get that big, you know, give us this guy right now. And Kuzmenko, again, like we've already mentioned him. You probably going to want to flip him, but not after a year where he was a cap dump in a trade. So I think they'll take offers. They'll take calls on almost anyone on the roster with a few minor exceptions. But aside from Markstrom, I don't think they're going to shop anyone this summer with time left on their contract.
Right. I'll tell you who I'm curious about, and that's Rasmus Anderson. And I don't think it's imminent, but he's got 2 years left. And I would say this has been one of his weaker years just overall. Yeah. I think he's been fine in terms of his production, but I think defensively he's had some real miscues and the underlings are not particularly strong with him as they have been in the past. When he's graded out as, you know, you look at this guy as a potential, you know, 1-2 type guy, this year just hasn't really been that. Now I'm curious to see, you know, potentially with a team like Toronto. I know the Flames and the Leafs have historically not necessarily been the greatest trade partners, especially in terms of what Calgary gets back in those deals. And there are some hard feelings on the management side, especially with Flames ownership. And we don't have to get into that. But, I am curious to see what they do with Anderson, because if you're looking to retool, you have so many defensemen in your pipeline who you look at as being maybe Rasmus Anderson facsimiles, and you look at the way that he was ushered into the lineup over, you know, a guy like Michael Stone coming in, eventually just progressing. And you look at the potential trajectory of guys like Jeremy Poirier, Hunter Brustevich, and you're looking to make room for these guys relatively soon. I'm not necessarily sure it's this summer, but are you really comfortable paying Rasmus Anderson until he's 37?
They shouldn't be. He should definitely be, there should be sort of a succession plan with him, depending on how the next few years go, right? But I don't think they're going to be cresting at, you know, at the end of his deal, where they're going to be like, we need Anderson to be in the lineup or else we're not going to be contenders. Unless that happens, I think it makes sense to start thinking about him as a trade piece down the road.
Yeah, and here's the question. I think it's a different question, but very similar. How many players do the Flames have on the roster that could still be traded for significant assets in the next 12, 24 months? Earlier in the show, I talked about Yegor Sharangovich, and I want to sort of circle back to it here because it's an interesting discussion to be had. You know, I know Sharangovich is a fan favorite. I thought he would be, and he has turned into one. And I was on the Yegor Sharangovich train back when he was in New Jersey. I almost bought his jersey in 2022. I loved this guy, loved the pro scouting that the Flames did to get him. He's on the roster now. He's had a huge season. He's, I think, 50 points. Do you keep him? And I don't mean that in terms of do you keep him beyond this year, because I think beyond next year, because I think they do. I think they re-sign him. But in terms of the next 12, 24 months, I am curious to see how this goes, because to an extent, I really like the player. To another extent, there is an element of shooting percentage spike where I don't know if it's all that dissimilar to Andre Kuzmenko last year, where you're seeing a guy playing on a team that misses the playoffs, whose ice time is huge, and he looks the part. He, like, you watch Yegor Sharangovich, and he does things that are very strong, and his underlings have been good over the last couple of weeks. But I just wonder, because he's at the age where he's a year away from UFA status, and I get there's the shiny new toy aspect of it, and I'm even liable of that. I like Yegor Sharangovich just as a fan personally. I think he's great, but what is best for the team long term? I don't even know.
Yeah, you sort of have a tension when stuff like this comes up between what the team's going to want ideally and what the player is going to want. Because if I'm Conroy, I'm looking at, you know, a 3-year deal for a player like that, right in that sort of sweet spot of, you can probably still trade him at the end. You're not committing to too much, but you're still keeping a player that you like. But someone of the players might look at that and go, if you want me to stay, you need to commit. I want 6, 7, and I want, you need to pay me, or else, you know, I'm an unrestricted free agent who just had, you know, one or two of the best seasons of my life. So I'm just going to go, if you don't pay me, why do I stay? So I think that's going to be the situation, right, where Sharangovich says 6 years plus, or else I'll just go, you know, go to a contender somewhere, because, you know, I'm in demand now. And the Flames might say, we want 2 to 3. It may come down to what the player and his agent demand more than what the Flames want, honestly.
It reminds me a lot of when Rennie Bork and Curtis Glencross were first breaking in with the Flames, sort of at the tail end of the Jerome Iginla era. And they didn't really have a core, and they gave these guys both. I think they gave Bork 6 years, and they gave Glencross 4, if my memory serves me properly. But it was just a sort of a situation where, you know, you have these guys, and they're good players. They were both fan favorites in Calgary. They ended up trading Bork to get Camilleri back. Glencross is still a huge part of the Alumni Association. But it's like, are these the guys who are going to be part of the turnaround eventually, or the guys who are here for the transitionary phase? And for both those guys in Calgary, it was the latter. They were both here for the transitionary phase. Curtis Glencross's last year with the Flames was Johnny Gaudreau's first year with the Flames. So it's something where you're looking, if the Flames draft a number one center, say 2025, 2026, and you give Yegor Sharangovich a 4-year deal, you have to be sort of prepared for the realization that by the time those guys are in, Yegor's probably out. So it's just something where you enjoy him while he's here. You hope you can turn it around quicker. You hope you draft a no doubter right away, and he can be part of the solution. But it's something where the age is going to start fighting you to a certain point where this guy's going to be 26 this summer. And if you draft a cornerstone, he's 18. That's an 8-year difference. I mean, it's just, it really illustrates it, how 26 in this day and age is not necessarily the youngest. So anywho, it's just a tightrope they'll have to walk. So do we have any more questions down there at the bottom? Maybe we'll get one or two more. Question, could they, should they, will they weaponize cap space to get picks and assets by taking on bad contracts? If so, which teams might be targets? Oh boy, love this, because I watch a lot of Arizona Coyotes hockey and they do that a lot. Kent, what do you think in terms of weaponizing? Because it reminds me sort of the similar era of Rene Bohr, Curtis Glencross. Remember the Flames traded, I think, a second-round pick and Robin Regier to get rid of Alex Kotelik, and then the Sabres ended up turning around and trading Regier for 2 second-round picks after the Flames didn't get a single pick for him. That's sort of the reverse of what I think they should be doing here going forward.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big fan of being creative. If you have a lot of cap space and you're not going to be a contender anytime soon, it's a clever thing to do. The Flames haven't done too much of it in the past because they're always hoping to be competitive or a contender, so they don't love doing that. But yeah, at this point, they're in asset accrual stage. They want more futures. They should be trading present wins for future wins as much as possible, because the next couple of years, there's almost no chance that they're going to be competing for a Stanley Cup. But if they want to be competing for a Stanley Cup at some point in the future, they need to build up that asset class. So I'm a big fan of doing that if they can.
And remember, the goal is not just to make the playoffs, it's to win the Stanley Cup. And I feel like sometimes maybe those two goals have been in conflict at times with the Flames, but they're in a position where they can maybe do both going forward if they play their cards right. And it's something where, you know, I think they maybe even started to do it a little bit with Andre Kuzmenko. They get him back as part of a Lindholm trade, and he's a distressed asset that they take on with one more year, and you're looking at maybe a guy who they can flip. And so you're looking at guys who have the skill on other teams who just aren't being weaponized properly. And I think back to when Arizona got Shane Gostisbehere from Philadelphia, and they were paid a second round pick to take him, and then they ended up flipping him for another pick after a year and a half. I mean, that's the exact sort of trade. And if you can get a defenseman like that, like a Gostisbehere, who can eat minutes and score a lot of points while not necessarily helping you win right away more than you need to, I mean, that would be sort of the ideal scenario for a Flames team that just needs to load up on as many picks as possible. And they're already sort of on that road. Anyway, let's get on to our last question.
Keep in mind, Montreal did with Monahan, right?
Exactly. Good point. I should have made that one.
That worked out really well for them. So more of
Flames wouldn't the Flames wouldn't the Flames want to do that in reverse, where instead of them giving up a first round, Montreal ended up with net 2 first round picks out of that, plus 2. I mean, that's crazy. The Flames end up on the wrong end of that. And as a result, they have to basically finish bottom 10 next year, lest they give up their own first round pick. And that's something that Ryan Pinder, who's in the chat right now. Hey, Ryan, you and your flow. Kent's stealing your thunder with his long hair, but Pinder is here. No. He's entertaining the masses in the chat. Oh, no way. Pinder's on the Mike Smith train right now. But it's something that Pinder and Frank Saravalli were talking about on a recent edition of Barnburner, where the Flames just, they have that incentive to finish bottom 10 next year. All right, we got one more question in the queue. Here we go. Flames Nation, should the Flames give Wolf the majority of the starts for the rest of the season? 13 games left. Do they give him 7 or more? Oh boy, it's a bit of a will they, won't they? I'm not even too sure myself. I don't want them to overdo it with him, but at the same time, he's looked a lot better on this most recent call-up. Kent, your thoughts?
Yeah, I would do it, but I don't, you know, I don't have to have him maintain a relationship with Jacob Markstrom either, right? So I'm not the coach. I'm not in that dressing room. It's easy for me to say, just play Wolf, and, you know, the veteran can go, you know, prepare for the golf course. But, I think that's the type of player who won't like that very much. So splitting them would make sense. Making a plan, and I think making a plan and communicating it to both players and saying, this is what we're doing, this is why, and having them both on the same page with you is probably the best way you can go, whatever that turns out to be.
Yeah, I think you and I are both of the mind that the Flames probably end up trading Jacob Markstrom this summer, and you're probably looking at preparing Dustin Wolf for a future where he is in that tandem. He's going, you know, maybe 30 starts next season. He's going maybe every other night, and you want to maybe get him into that rhythm, you know, get him a little bit of experience being in that tandem situation. And I mean, we don't even know if Dan Vladar, what his status is going to be with his hip surgery. Hopefully he's ready for the start of next season. That probably takes away the option of the Flames trading him this summer. I think if the contract didn't already do that. So you're probably looking at Vladar, Wolf starting next season. And so getting that little rotation down the stretch, I don't think it'd be the worst thing. And, you know, you're not making the playoffs at this point, so there you don't really have a whole lot to lose. And with Dustin, I mean, we talked about it, me and Cammy and I did on the last time that I was here. I mean, he's lost a game since then, but he has looked so much more like an NHL goaltender versus when I watched him in his earlier stints this season. I was thinking to myself, and this is something that I never thought watching him in the American League, this guy looks small. And I thought on his most recent run of games, he looked perfectly fine. He looked more like Jonathan Quick than Darren Pang in the net. So that's sort of what you're hoping for eventually with Dustin Wolf between the pipes. Before we sign off, hey, Ryan Pike is in our chat. We want to give Ryan a big old shout out. He was at Greta. Boy, we got a star-studded roster. These punks are still going, says Ryan Pike. Hey, look at that
I'm
guy.
Older than all of you. What are you talking about? Punks.
Exactly. I think that's the pot calling the kettle black right there from Pike to Kent Wilson right there. But hey, we got to congratulate Ryan Pike, the publishing of his first book, On the Clock, is available bookstores everywhere. You can go online to Triumph Books. I think they have it in EPUB format now if you want to load it onto your Kobo. I've got a Kobo. I was trying to get it on the publisher's website a couple days ago, and it was after it was published, but they were saying that it wasn't released yet and it wasn't ready to ship in EPUB format. So I've got a physical copy.
I'm going to start reading soon. So
yeah, I'll probably end up maybe buying both, but hey, yeah, we got to give him a shout out. That's huge. And if you're a Canucks fan lurking in the chat, there's Daniel Wagner has his version of the book, I think coming out this week. So I'm not sure if it's already out or if it's coming out this week. So keep an eye out. There's a couple of versions that have already been published for other teams as well. So we got to give the ups to Pike and everybody from our network who's been putting together these books, because it's super impressive. And Pike has been around this block for longer than pretty much anybody of us, except for you, Mr. Wilson. So, yeah, I don't know if you have anything you want to say about that.
No, it's great to see. I hired Ryan way back in the day when I first took over Flames Nation. And he's been, I mean, he has one of the most encyclopedic knowledges of the Flames that I've ever seen, and he works his ass off, honestly. So congrats to him. You know, I'm really looking forward to reading it too.
Well, that's the thing. I did all that research earlier tonight to find the last Flames defense prospect who scored 100 points in a season. I finally figured out that it was, who was it? It was some guy who was playing for the Victoria Cougars back in like 1985. Pike could have told me that. I think Pike could have told me that right away, that it was Rob Cavell who scored 100 points in 80-45. Rustevich is obviously getting 92 this season. So that's a great way to cap off what has been a fun little Saturday night version of Afterburner. We thank you all for tuning in. Kent, you got anything else you want to plug just before we sign off?
Nope. Thanks for joining us, everyone. If you like Discord, stop by the Big Body Presence Discord server. Check it out. But yeah, looking forward to doing this again tomorrow.
Absolutely. You can follow Kent at Kent Wilson, Kent_Wilson. You can follow me at Mike T. Gould. Thank you all for tuning in on this Saturday night. One more time, the Flames fall to the Vancouver Canucks 4-2. This has been Afterburner.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.